Hardly a day goes by that I don't hear some good comments about Tom Joyner and some of the other talk show hosts here on WTSB. But Tom Joyner is one of the best, one of the pioneers, and he does a lot of research on what he presents to you today. I have no idea what he might talk about, but I guarantee you it has been well researched and it will be worth your time to listen. So may I present one of the great talk show hosts in America, one of the pioneers, none other than Tom Joyner.
Well, my take on the presidential race and immigration in a moment. But first, on Monday, May 9th, we learned that most of Detroit's public schools were closed due to a teacher sick out. The issue, as always, is money. Detroit does not have any money. But it does have a majority of minority students who desperately need education. At one time, Detroit had a population of more than 1 million people. Today, it's around 600,000. The city plans to tear down many slum areas and turn the land into farms. The only hope that the young people of Detroit have is the hope for an education and a way out of the misery. Unions, auto unions in particular, destroyed Detroit. And the teachers' union now threatens to leave the next generation unprepared to rebuild their city. I refer you back to the phrase used to raise money for historically black colleges. That phrase, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Now, I value good teachers as much as anyone, and to the degree that money is available, teachers should receive the lion's share. When one enters the teaching profession, they do so, knowing that it does not pay as well as other fields they might explore. But the good teachers that I have met, and I've met many, tell me that there is no greater satisfaction than to watch the light go on in a student's eyes and the smile that follows. Now, I was fortunate to have three special teachers in my life. They didn't make much money, but they didn't complain. Of course, there was no heavy union influence on them at the time. I had other good teachers, but these three made a lasting impression on me. Good teachers are special. They should be paid as well as a community can afford to pay them. More than 90 schools in Detroit shut the door in the faces of young students, eager to learn. Detroit is bankrupt. The once powerful auto industry in Detroit fell under the weight of union demands, and that fallout continues to wreak havoc. Detroit's children are suffering from teachers' union greed. Through a union of their own, nothing good can come of that. Teachers went back on May 4th, after the city assured their union that they would be paid during the summer months. Could not a strike have waited until the city defaulted on their pay? Well, last Tuesday, the voters of Indiana gave the Trump campaign a solid endorsement, and Ted Cruz did the right and gracious thing. He suspended his campaign. Last Wednesday, John Kasich suspended his campaign in the face of reality and party pressure to unite. The staged riots at rallies for Donald Trump were not the product of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Although some of Bernie's extreme followers do participate, these riots are from the Clinton camp, designed to turn violent and stifle free speech. These so-called protesters are paid, mostly by George Soros and MoveOn.org, and pushed by David Brock at Media Matters for America. Remember those names, MoveOn.org, David Brock, and Media Matters when you see their vicious ads on TV attacking the Republican candidate. These efforts to deny Trump's free speech are also paid for by a reclusive billionaire named Jonathan Lewis, who is identified by the Miami Herald as a mystery man. Lewis inherited roughly $1 billion from his father. Jonathan Lewis, who was identified by the Miami Herald as a mystery man. He inherited $1 billion from Peter Lewis, his father, who's the founder of Progressive Insurance Company. Now, we've all seen the TV commercials featuring a fictitious character named Flo, hawking Progressive Insurance. Once Lewis was identified, many Americans have canceled that insurance. I was never a Progressive Insurance participant, so I cannot, regrettably, cancel it. Many of the rioters at the Trump rallies admit to answering a Craigslist call offering $16 an hour to go out and do these protests. You don't have to like Donald Trump to see the danger of these organizations promoting hate and violence. Your candidate could be next. Except that we do not see these kind of hate-filled demonstrations from conservatives directed at Hillary or Bernie. Think about that. Ignorant liberals and illegal aliens are on TV each week blocking traffic and demanding that Trump be denied free speech. When was the last time you saw conservatives rioting at a rally for Hillary or Bernie? Democrats and independents who have lost their jobs because of disastrous deals like NAFTA are abandoning Hillary in droves. She was in West Virginia last week, trying to walk back what she had said about putting the miners in the coal industry out of business. Nobody there was buying her lame excuses. The coal industry unions supported Hillary in her race against Obama, and then they switched to Obama to help him win. At that time, nobody was talking about destroying our coal industry, and the coal miners let their union bosses lead them over the cliff. Hillary supporters are for TPP, and so is Hillary. It was signed into law, NAFTA, by her husband, Bill Clinton. Massive civil disobedience continues. These are the Clinton Soros riots of 2016. It is time now for all of us, Republicans or Democrat, to realize the real dangers of a Hillary Clinton presidency. Some may not like Donald Trump. I understand that. But the alternative, Hillary Clinton, is far worse. Politics is a nasty business, but we have to re-examine this mindset that we must be loyal to a particular political party. Neither party is the same as it was even 20 years ago. And yet, many voters, be they Democrat or Republican, toe the same old party line. We've always been Democrats, they'll say, or we've always been Republicans, they tell us. Well, I've been both in my lifetime. Today, I am simply an American, an independent voter, and I vote for the person who I think will be the best to guide us away from the disastrous years of Barack Obama. Years that we will find have been put into place miseries that we have yet to experience. We haven't seen the full ramifications of Barack Obama's mistakes. His damage will go on well beyond his time in office, and yet Hillary Clinton tells us he was great and that she wants to continue his policies. She wants to take care of Obama's legacy. The next president of the United States will most likely be able to appoint 3, if not 4, members to the Supreme Court. A loaded, liberal Supreme Court would negatively affect an entire generation of Americans. We cannot let that happen. Donald Trump was not my ideal candidate, but there was not an ideal candidate running in either party. Another 4 years of Barack Obama in a pantsuit is even less ideal. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. Vote your conscience, not your party. One of the most important issues for America today is economics. Jobs are desperately needed, and not just temporary jobs or low-paying jobs. The middle class is being crushed. Say what you will about Donald Trump, but the man has built an incredibly large and successful company that has thousands of workers employed. He knows how to create jobs. Consider this. The establishment of both parties fought Trump tooth and nail. Why? Because they know that he's not a typical politician and that he intends to shake up the establishment. They and their liberal media attack hounds will do all possible to keep Trump out and Hillary in. Frankly, I'm angry, along with most Americans, as what has been done to our country, and I approve of anyone who upsets the gravy train, much like Jesus upset the tables of money grubbers in the temple. I intend to vote for Trump and contribute as much to his campaign as allowed by law for the general election. Hillary will have the huge donors with her. If you don't want Hillary Clinton in the Oval Office, I urge you to contribute to the Trump campaign when it opens for financial help. $25 or $100, whatever you can afford. This isn't about hurt feelings over a candidate that lost out to Trump. Kick a post, mumble under your breath, but then put those emotions aside and concentrate on what's best for our children and grandchildren. Trump or Clinton? For me, that's an easy decision. Trump is a strong executive, and he has the ability needed to surround himself with the best people for each need of business or government. No president is prepared to lead this country alone, although Obama thought he could, and we see the results of that ego trip. Trump's ego will not allow him to fail in the presidency. If nothing else, Trump is a man driven to perfection. His image is important to him, and that image would be tarnished if he failed to turn the country around, seal the border, build the wall in that effort, stop illegal immigration, stop the flow of American businesses leaving for foreign countries and the tax benefits that it brings to them, reduce the highest business tax rate in the world to encourage companies that have left to return, and provide jobs for Americans. Rebuild our military that Obama has decimated so that our strength sends a clear message that America is back, that we will not be intimidated or shrink from our responsibilities. Give our veterans the help and the medical care they have earned. That's a huge amount of work to be done to cancel Obama's executive orders and reverse Obama's fundamental changes that have left our country struggling. Get the members of the Muslim Brotherhood out of our government and let foreign governments know that America will protect and defend itself and its allies. Put patriotism and pride back into the American spirit. Anyone who thinks that Hillary Clinton could or would want to accomplish those things is delusional. Her record in life is one of lies and unethical greed. Her record in government is pitiful. What did she accomplish in her brief period in the Senate? Her time as Secretary of State was a payoff from Obama to keep her quiet. Her decisions in that job were not well thought out at best, and lives were lost because of her lack of judgment, not just in Benghazi, but in Iraq and Syria as well. The only job Hillary created was getting her inexperienced daughter Chelsea hired by NBC for $600,000 a year. Chelsea did little work and banked a bundle. The charges made against Trump, such as him being against women and him being a racist, are destroyed by facts. Trump's businesses employ many women, many black women, and many of them in leadership positions. The plain truth is that Donald Trump, as obnoxious as he can be at times, knows how to put the best qualified people in the right positions, regardless of their color or gender, and that is desperately needed in our government. I do believe that Trump should apologize for some of his harshest statements in the primary. I know that's just the way politics is played, but some things said, for example, don't bear repeating. For instance, the National Enquirer's claim that Cruz's father was pictured with John Kennedy's killer, Lee Harvey Oswald. It wasn't true, as experts who examined the picture later attested, and it was in poor taste. Cruz's father was not running for president. Trump would help his candidacy by simply admitting that in the heat of battle, he said some things better left unsaid. Others made statements, too, that deserve an apology, but that's beside the point. Trump is recognized as the Republican candidate. Having said that, we cannot allow overheated emotion to cloud our judgment in November's election. This is not about a political party. It's about the future of an America that has been reduced by the Obama presidency to a shadow of its former self, a shadow that Hillary Clinton has told us she would continue to cast across America. You know, when anyone in America speaks up about illegal immigration, they're called racist bigots. We're reminded by liberal America that this is a country of immigrants, and we should welcome all who want to come here, legally or illegally. But immigration today, folks, is far different from what it was when those immigrants of long ago came here. When the Titanic steamed across to America, its third-class hold was full of people immigrating to America, legally. These people were from different countries, and each of them was leaving behind everything and everyone they knew to start a new and better life. Many, if not most, were coming only with what they could carry. In those days, nearly all immigrants came in by ship, and they were processed at Ellis Island in New York, carefully vetted. A careful list was kept of each person, the family name, how many in the family, their health, and where they planned to go to settle was all recorded, and even today, people can check those records to find the names of family members who passed through the doors of Ellis Island. Last week, Ann and I watched a program called Who Do You Think You Are? On TLC Network. That program series features famous people who are looking for clues to their family's history. We taped the entire series so we don't miss one show. They're fascinating. The series has ended for this year, but I would suggest to you that you find the TLC Network and you watch for that program, Who Do You Think You Are, and watch it with your family. Last week, it featured the actress Leah Michelle and her desire to help her father find out where the family had come from. It turned out that her great-great-grandmother on her father's side came to America from Turkey. They were Jewish. She arrived at Ellis Island, where she was denied entry because she could not write or read. The purpose of the rulings at Ellis Island was to keep people who would overtax America's economy with their needs from settling here, something we have abandoned. A Jewish custom at the time was for the brother of a widow's dead husband to marry her and support her. In the end, the deceased husband's brother did marry this widow, and she was allowed to stay in America. Most of the unfortunate immigrant souls on the Titanic never did reach America's shores, but even in death, we know who they were and where they came from. We know because of records, written documents that could be checked to see who had lived and who had died. Today, there are approximately 14 million people in America that should not be here. We have no records of who they are, how long they've been here, or even why they are here. We don't know if they are rapists or murderers or drug dealers or child molesters. We have no way to determine whether or not they are terrorists waiting to attack us, and we're letting more in every day. We don't know if they are ill or carry contagious diseases. Many women come here ready to give birth so they will have an anchor baby. That baby, born in America, is automatically an American citizen and thus cannot be forced to leave. This baby is their Get Into America free card. Our hospitals have an average cost of nearly $7,000 per birth if there are no complications. If the child suffers from heart defects or Down syndrome, autism, or other problems, the cost of that illegal child who becomes legal because it was born on American soil jumps to $500,000 with long-term care into the $1 million for each birth. Each child, legal or illegal, enjoys free breakfasts and lunch, though 12 years of publicity has given them education at an average cost of some $8,000 each. Additionally, American taxpayers foot the bill for nearly all of the medical and housing assistance for the child and mother. More hidden costs add up in classes to teach the children English. Connecticut alone suffers 120 different languages in its schools, while Colorado suffers over 40 foreign languages that cripple their classrooms. Legal immigrants sponsor their relatives in chain migration and family reunification at U.S. taxpayers' expense. Once these illegal aliens hit the country, half of them work off the books, and they don't pay annual taxes of $401 billion annually, according to a Bear Stearns report. Additionally, they form the second largest underground economy in the world. Both legal and illegal immigrants send some $90 billion back to their home countries in cash transfers on untaxed money. While some illegal aliens sneak across the southern border, many, if not most, enter our country legally. They just simply overstay their visas. They were never intending to return to their home country. It's that easy. You just get a visa, come in, forget about it. Another way that illegal aliens enter America is by using forged documents. Once illegal aliens arrive here, if they do not have a forged passport, they buy forged documents here. The only way to stop that is to crack down in a serious way on those who make and sell these forged documents. We don't do that. If employers, state and federal agencies, cannot tell a forged document from a real one, then those illegal aliens will receive benefits here. Illegal immigrants are not supposed to receive benefits here, but that does not mean that they do not apply for and receive them. They receive grants, professional accreditations, loans, WIC, disability, public housing, college educations, food stamps, unemployment benefits, and tax credits from state and federal agencies. Many receive money at the end of the year and never paid a nickel in taxes. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, at least one-third of foreign-born citizens in the United States are illegal aliens. Modern technology requires skilled workers, not unskilled ones. Yet only 16% of legal immigrants are admitted as skilled workers. Today, ethnic enclaves are high and growing. In the city of Miami, for example, nearly half the population speaks English poorly or not at all. 73% speak a language other than English at home. Consider that in 1900, the number of people per square mile in the United States was 25.6. In 2002, it was 82 people per square mile, more than three times greater. Since 2002, that number has become even greater. Since the discovery of America, the United States has been a nation of immigrants and continues to be so compared to all other nations. The United States has a very liberal immigration policy. In 2005, we allowed an astounding number of 1,122,373 legal immigrants permanent status in our country. There are about 3.5 million on the waiting list to legally enter our country. 11 years later, we continue to let those number of immigrants in legally. The United States accepts more legal immigrants than all of the other industrialized countries combined. Since the mid-1960s, America has welcomed nearly 30 million legal immigrants and received perhaps another 15 million illegals. Nobody knows that real number. These immigrants add little to our economy. They come to us at a great cost, because they are not economic abstractions, but human beings, with their own cultures and their own ideas, often at odds with our own. Increasing numbers of them arrive with little education, none of the skills necessary to succeed in a modern economy. Many wind up then stuck in our lowest economic rungs, where they rely on something that immigrants of older generations did not have, a vast welfare and social services apparatus that has been enormously amplified. The cost of immigration has soared. Economist Milton Friedman said this: "It's just obvious that you can't have the free immigration and a welfare state. The realities of the great migration of the late 1800s and 1900s differ from today. That era's immigrants were Jewish tailors and seamstresses who helped develop New York's garment industry, Italian stonemasons and bricklayers who helped build some of our greatest buildings, German merchants and shopkeepers and artisans, all brought important skill with them that fitted easily into the American economy. An interesting aspect of the Balkanization of America is the often played race card. Whenever the discussion of illegal immigration comes up, that's played. According to most Latino advocacy groups, just being against illegal immigration is racist. This attitude is best expressed by Alfredo Gutierrez, a political consultant who said, "We call things racism just to get attention. We reduce complicated problems to racism, not because it's racism, but because it works." There are two major differences between the Mexican immigrants and those doomed souls on the Titanic. Those coming here in 1912 were entering America the correct way, and they were coming to live in a country that had vast open spaces and only about 40 million people. America was growing and needed manpower. Today, America has more than 300 million citizens and does not need more people, as it did in the nearly 100-year-ago frame. By the way, the claim that Mexicans do the work that Americans won't do simply does not hold up under examination. It is not that Americans won't do the work. It's that Americans won't do it for $3.50 an hour. By hiring illegal aliens, the employer doesn't have to pay any Social Security or any health care benefits, retirement, or any of the other perks that Americans are given when they are hired. Not so much anymore. But certainly all 14 million of these illegal aliens are not here to work. Many are criminals and many are children. All are a drain on state and federal resources. An illegal caught in Mexico is caught and jailed, but the Mexican government objects to America having the same right. Mexico has a wall they built between it and Honduras. They object to our having the same wall. We welcome legal immigrants, but we cannot be Mexico's dumping ground. These are not doctors and scientists streaming across our southern border illegally. Mexico is much older than America, yet it is poor, crime-ridden, and is an entry port for drugs and criminals, not to mention Islamic terrorists. The various governments of Mexico have been corrupt for hundreds of years. They've done little to advance the living standards of the Mexican people. Democrats feel that they will have a huge voting bloc if they can pass a law that will make all illegal Mexicans American citizens. In California, the liberal Democrat governor, Jerry Brown, has just signed a law that allows illegal aliens to vote in California. In Virginia, their liberal Democrat Governor McAuliffe wants to let 200,000 criminals out of jail and allow them to vote. This is the same man who helped Bill and Hillary Clinton buy their first mansion after leaving the presidency. Who do you think Democrats expect to vote to keep them in office and continue the flow of giveaways? The reality is this: America cannot afford to support Mexico any longer. The Mexican economy counts on money sent back to families in Mexico from those Mexicans working here. The majority of immigrants to the United States at the turn of the 20th century intended their stay here to be only temporary, until after a few years of work, they could save enough money to return home with better means to support their families. That is not true today. Immigration is a delicate problem, and we should not call for an end to all legal immigration. But we do need to return to the common sense way our ancestors used in determining whether new arrivals will be a help to us or a burden on us. We do not owe the world's poor and downtrodden entry into our country. If they are drains on their home country, they will be a drain on ours. This is modern America. We do not hunt with spears and clubs any longer. We cannot allow ourselves to be wedded to archaic rules of immigration into America. We are no longer dealing with someone with a poncho and sombrero who wants to be an American. The recent riots in California, where Mexicans marched under the Mexican flag, where Mexican children shouted profanities and waved their middle finger at Trump supporters, and roads were blocked to prevent free speech in our own country. Free speech that these ingrates were taking advantage of with their hate. We have to close our borders. We reopen them only after we have taken the steps necessary to be able to determine who wants to enter, where they come from, what their intentions are. To do less is to fill our country with people who are a drain on our taxpayers. And worse, those who come here as refugees and the demands that they bring with them, and who have among them Islamic jihadists who want to kill us in the name of Allah, a God they worship and who they are convinced has called them to slay innocent people who will not join their cult. Folks, we can pray all day for God to help us, but if we do not take steps to help ourselves, those prayers are being wasted. Carl?
Well, Mr. Tom, you had some great commentary today, and we're going to get back with you in just a minute or so, but I want you to know that everywhere I go, I get a lot of good comment on your commentary, and if you have anything else today, I'm going to sit back and listen and learn and be enlightened. So does that wrap you up today, or do you have some more commentary?
No, I can, a couple of things, Carl. I know that you are a good friend of my good friend, George Beasley, who was the former principal of Meadow School and who put the Benson Station, WPYB, on the air. Yeah, my mind was kind of wandering on me a little bit. Ann just helped me with that, too. On Wednesday, Carl, George and his wife, Ann, will fly to Rochester, Minnesota to enter the Mayo Clinic. On the 16th of this month, George will undergo a kidney transplant. His kidneys had completely shut down on him. He will undergo a kidney transplant with a kidney that is donated to him by his youngest son, Brad. I hope that our listeners will offer a prayer for George, a good man who started with nothing, not unlike myself, and that I think that's one of the reasons we're so close, and built one of the premier broadcast chains in the world. The man has paid his dues. He's a good family man, and I have a good feeling about it, but you don't ever know. George is 84. He was 84 April 9th, and so you never know what's going to happen in these things, but I believe that God's going to pull him through, and I'd appreciate any prayers that any and all of us can offer to him.
Amen. Now, like you, I've known George Beasley for many, many years. George used to be a regular weekly visitor in my home many years ago. I told my wife, Marjorie, way back then, I said, George Beasley is going to become a millionaire or he's going broke one. And you know what happened.
I do indeed.
He became one of the most successful broadcasters in the world. And I think, now, you straighten me out if I'm wrong. I think George Beasley, as a single individual, on more radio stations than any single person, not a group ownership, but a single person ownership, than any broadcaster in the world. Now, that has been my thinking. I may be wrong.
No, but that's probably right, Carl. If not, it's mighty, mighty close. From Benson, where he really didn't have the money to put it on the air, he had to, he put it on with Scotch tape. Then it did pretty well for him, and he was able to buy with Billy Britt of Smithfield there, a lawyer, WKYX in Paducah, Kentucky. I went down and worked there with him for a while. And then from there, he sold Benson, bought the station, WFMC in Goldsboro, and then started to grow from there. I came back in 1975 as vice president of George's company, and we began to buy in markets like Cleveland and Philadelphia. And then in late 77, when I branched out and bought my stations up in Petersburg, Virginia, George went on to build a monstrous company. I'm very proud of what he accomplished because he was born in Ararat, Virginia, which is just out of Mount Airy. His mother died about 2 years ago, I guess, at 101 years old. He had her sisters died at 103, 100, and at 98. So there is a good line there. But George and I used to talk. We traveled for 40 years, his wife, my wife, and I. And we've been all over this country, all over this world. But we would just sit and reminisce about the way things were in those days and what it took to build the chain of stations he has, what it took to build the 57 stations that I ultimately wound up with. It was a very, very rocky road, and just one wrong step could have sent you into bankruptcy. And both of us knew that we could not lose. We didn't have any room to lose. There was nowhere to go, nothing to do. So that's why George and I have been so close over the years. We've been through the same fires together. We've reminisced about the same things together. We value the same things together, God and country and family. So I'm going to be on my knees on Wednesday. I told him I'd fly to Minnesota if I thought I could help, and he said, no, they won't let you in the operating room anyway, so don't do it. In any event, again, I hope that all of our listeners will offer a prayer for George Beasley on the 16th of May with his kidney transplant.
I've been following what's been going on with Donald Trump and the people that he has. He's found a pathway to the nomination, but it looks like a lot of people want to deny him of that. Now, I think it was Ann Coulter that said that, Paul Ryan is going to meet with Donald Trump sometime this Thursday. And Ann was suggesting what she thought that Paul Ryan would want to get him into a back room and to bring him into some kind of deal or political strategy that would benefit Paul Ryan. I think it was Ann Coulter.
The Ryan side of the party, he, of course, being the Speaker of the House.
Yes, that's right.
They want to make Trump alter what he's thinking. They want him to adopt more of their thinking. Ryan, for instance, is all for immigration, and mm-hmm. there are other things. But they want him to change his tune and not rock the boat. Trump's not going to do that. And
that was my thing.
Yeah, and I think they will come to some agreement on Thursday, Ryan will fall into place. I don't blame, some people do, I don't. I don't blame the Bushes for saying they won't endorse Trump. If they don't vote for him, I'm going to be disappointed. But, you know, some harsh things were said about Jeb Bush, and, of course, a lot of harsh things been said about Donald Trump.
That's right.
But he also said, Donald did, something about former President Bush and about George Herbert Walker Bush, the older Bush, that should not have been said. And so I can understand that the family would be a bit angry and not willing to run out for front with balloons and, you know, shout Trump's name from the mountaintops. But the truth is, we have got to, and they've got to, understand that we are at a pivotal point in the history of this country and the history of the world. This country is the only thing that's standing between the entire world and chaos. And we cannot continue to go on with Barack Obama's policies. I'm doing a commentary, Carl, for a couple of Mondays from now because I have to do a lot of research. But I'm doing a commentary on who Barack Obama was, who he is, and why it is so important that we don't allow Hillary Clinton to continue his policies as she has said she will do. That'll be coming up in a future commentary.
I'm privy to have a good friend, Wayne Allen Root. And Wayne Allen Root sees a pathway for Donald Trump to win the nomination and win the presidency of the United States. Of course, you know Billy Cunningham, and I've had Billy Cunningham on once or twice, but I know Billy Cunningham, and Billy said there is no way under the sun that Donald Trump can win the nomination for the presidency of the United States, that Hillary has just about wrapped it up. I think he said that she only needed something like 28 more delegates, very few delegates, in other words, to do that. But what's happening here, in my opinion, has never happened before in the United States. A lot of Democrats are coming over to Donald Trump, but a lot of people are, he's getting associations with many, many groups there. Donald Trump is the most, he's the most unusual, most different politician.
True.
Donald Trump is the most different, most unusual politician that I have ever seen. And so I don't count him out, but I think this is going to be one of the most important, one of the most fascinating campaigns in the history of this world.
I agree.
And Lord help us if we don't elect somebody that's got some conservative values. Now, one thing I don't like about Trump, he embraces Planned Parenthood, a lot of things I'm not in favor of. But still, all having been said, I think that he would be a lot less worse than some of the other people that might be running.
And Carl, he says he's not for abortion with Planned Parenthood, but that he does think they do some other good work and blah, blah, blah. As long as they're doing abortion, I have to disagree with him. I would not give them money from the federal government to deal in abortion. But I think I don't have any question that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican candidate. Hillary Clinton, if she's not indicted by the FBI, and be honest with you, I honestly think she will be. But if she's not, she will be the Democrat. And then it's take the gloves off and let's go at it. I don't think Hillary can play the woman card because Trump is already eating her alive on how she treated women who her husband had abused. That's a very, very difficult thing for her to overcome. It's one thing to say, well, Bill Clinton's not running. We're not talking about Bill Clinton. Only what he did, of course, and then you're talking about what she did. And what she did was abominable.
Another thing, Bernie Sanders has lots and lots of people that are voting for him that say they will not vote for Hillary.
Yeah.
That's another question in the little puzzle here.
Yeah.
But, Tom, I just ask everybody to tune into your analysis. I know you've got your heart in it. You try to, as far as you know, tell the truth and nothing else but the whole truth. And
exactly.
So some great commentary coming your way, and we're proud to have you on the airwaves of WTSB.
Carl, I appreciate it. And everybody, join me. God bless America.